98.5 of Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich, broadcasting live from the Town Fair Tire Studios and simulcast all over this great country on NBC Sports Network Boston.
NBC. I saw this last night, and I had to play this. So on WBZ, they had the I-Team go out and investigate people who were misusing the handicap placards that people put in their cars. And so they went down to the Seaport, and they noticed for their big special that there were all of the handicap spots. You can park for free in front of a meter if you have a handicap placard. That's one thing. You just don't have to pay. So they noticed, they went down there several days, and it's like the same cars that were lined up there, and the people who were coming out were not handicapped. So they just sat there and started waiting for people, and they filmed them for like 5 days to make sure that this was a pattern, that these guys continued to misuse the handicap placards. And they go up to one dude who's a construction guy, and he's walking over towards his car, and he sees the dude from WBZ go with the mic, so he starts to walk away, and here's how the exchange goes.
Day after day, the I-Team watched this construction worker finish up his shift in Boston's Seaport District and then return to his Toyota sedan with the handicap placard hanging in the rearview mirror. Even on days when he hitched a ride with a friend, he brought the placard along to score the free spot.
Hey. Who does that placard belong to?
It's my uncle.
Your uncle's placard?
Yeah.
It belongs to a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hang on, what am I hearing in the other room? What is that, Dan?
Bird is parked in a handicapped spot right now in the parking lot.
Are you in a handicapped spot, Bird?
Bird! And there are half as many, at least half, if not more, less employees in this building.
The extra 50 feet to the
front. So the parking lot is not nearly as full as it normally is.
It's half empty.
It's more than half empty.
Bird, what are you doing?
He joked. I go, you're probably parked in a handicapped spot right now. And then he started laughing. So,
Bird.
He's guilty.
Are you in a handicapped spot?
Yes.
He's going to.
He's moving the car.
Why are you?
Ten minutes before he has to leave.
Put on his mic. Why are you in a handicapped spot?
No, I just pulled up and it came in because I had
You pulled up and it came in. So you couldn't control your car and it just came in.
Right there. It was a straight shot.
It just went to the door.
Do you do that with every handicap parking space?
They are typically better spots.
Yeah. Why did you park there?
I just felt like coming right in and getting Nick out of here.
This has nothing to do with Nick.
You realize there's other spots.
Yes, I do, though.
Why didn't you park in those?
When I opened the gate, it was a straight shot. I came right in, parked, and...
Yeah, get the I-Team over here.
Yeah. This is Bird last night on TV.
It belongs to a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bird,
I want, it's a one-and-done thing. I won't do it.
No, that's an a-hole move. Like, the fact that you have that in your DNA to pull into a handicapped parking spot.
I understand that, but there's no one here.
That's the point! Go park on the other spot!
Right. You saved yourself maybe 10 seconds.
Oh, you are the worst. Oh, I can't stand... that is really the worst. Like, there hasn't been many times in my life that, like, that's something that I've had to use. But for about 2 weeks, my wife had immunity of, like, zero. So we had to park right near our building because if someone coughed on her, she'd go to the hospital. So we used a placard for, like, 2 weeks, and she felt awful doing it. And the fact that an a-hole like you would have been parked in that spot, where we had to go to a dirty parking garage where people puked the night before, and there's a disease infesting all over the place that could send my wife to the hospital for another 3 weeks because some dumb a-hole said, my car just went and pulled in there. It went into myself. That you suck. That is, you are an a-hole. Right, move your car right now.
All right, well.
I mean,
if you're downtown, no wait. If you're downtown, and we're going to be downtown soon, but if you're downtown and there's no parking anywhere near the building, it's a dick move. But at least you can understand the thought process behind it. Here, we're not downtown. Parking's free. There's a parking lot that's 3/4 empty at this hour. And he needed to park in a handicapped spot.
Somebody go get a picture of the parking lot. Like, how many open spots there are, even right now, and he goes right into that one. Well, the car went into it. The car went into it.
It's a straight shot.
Oh, my sweet Lord, Bird. Oh, that got me mad.
And then you put your wife on top of it, which really made it good.
Because it's like the only time I've ever had to experience that. Like, I've always thought of you as a jerk move. But when you're in that situation where you're like, I got to get inside as fast as I can. Or like, she could get really sick. Like, that stuff, like, that sucks. Like, that pisses me off. Like, matter of fact, she could have had that thing for, I think, like 6 months. After 2 weeks.
That's what I was just going to ask. What do you do with it?
We just gave it back. Or I don't even know if we gave it back. We just didn't use it. We didn't use it anymore. So I could have sold it or pawned it off like some of these guys are apparently doing. But, I mean, we didn't. Because we just felt, okay, we're fine. Her doctor said that, you know, her numbers had gone up a little bit. Even though we had the right to use it as much as we did, I wasn't going to be that person. Because that's just like, that's karma's going to come back and get you. It's going to kick your ass. Right, Bird? Has he left yet? Yeah, he's going down. How did you know he parked in there? Did he just admit it off the air when we were playing that clip?
I was half joking, and I said, you parked in a park. Because, believe it or not, that spot is taken 9 times out of 10 by other people who work in this building as well.
Yeah,
so I just kind of jokingly said, oh, Bert, you're probably parked in there now. And he laughed, and he went, yeah, I am. And Mike and I looked at each other, and we're like, with all of the empty spaces, you could have plenty of spots close to the door.
Right. It's like Wally World here. It's like that scene in Vacation where they pull in and no one's there.
And he wants to get the best spot.
And he wants to get the best spot. He goes, parks up. God, Bird, that drove me crazy.
Well, Rich, it's close to where you park, so you know what? We should keep an eye on it for the next, you know, couple of weeks or so.
Yeah, I guess so.
You'd be surprised how many times it is full.
That is amazing. Bird. We've got Bird, who we just played something for the I-Team on WBZ, and it was they're busting people who are using fake placards to get in parking spaces, handicapped parking spaces, and we find out the Bird is parked out in a parking handicap spot right out front with a million other spaces.
There used to be another man used to work here that parked there, too.
I'm now hearing all these things about these abusers of that spot, which is amazing, and it's infuriating to me.
It's infuriating.
So, real quick, Rob, can we put Rob on line 3 on? He wants to say something to Bird real quick. Dan, in the other room, you mind popping Rob on line 3 on? Because you're in the other room. Rob, what's up, man? Good morning.
Hey, guys. Hey.
Hey.
Yeah, so Bird is such a dick.
I agree.
there's nothing more despicable than that. At my business, there's somebody who parks in, like, this handicapped spot every day.
You can't say that.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
I mean, listen, it does say something about your character, but I'm going to excuse Bird because I just think it wasn't. I just think he didn't even know. Like, oh, just like someone drew a happy guy in a chair on the thing. I'll drive on top of the happy guy. Like, I think he's got no idea what. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt just because of the things Bird has said on this show before. But that's infuriating, Bird. You're never going to do that again, right? All right.
Well,
okay.
Now that he knows that people spit on his car.
Sure.
Question is, why would you ever do it in the first place?
Well,
when you're pulling in, you don't feel weird?
Why would you do it in the first place?
Why would you ever do it in the first place?
No, honestly, the gate opened, I just went straight out.
Oh, no, because that's so normal, because that spot's
There's no official, like...
It's
only painted in.
There's a 4 foot by 4 foot.
It's not official.
It says
why not? I'll do this one time. That's
a wheelchair on it.
I'm sorry. I said I'm sorry. Forgive me. Jeez.
There's nobody that parks in this parking lot anymore. It's the only spot that looks different than any other spot. What do you mean? You didn't see it.
I mean, it is the best spot.
It's not official.
It's
painted in. That's the line of the day right there.
That's great.
It's painted in, so it's not official.
It looks like a sign. She's on the ground. She's got a handicap guy.
Imagine what goes on in Everett. They just must like pull up the front of bars and park merch. So sorry there.
It's the best.
Oh, man. Tap on the curb.
Painted on the ground.
I think if somebody is parked in a parking spot and you're not handicapped, or it's like an obvious abuser. Like, I mean, there's been times before where you've seen somebody park in a parking spot, they didn't look handicapped, whatever, but for some reason or the other, they are and they need it. I get that. But if it's someone like you know at your office who isn't, who does that, shouldn't you have the right to be able to do things to their car?
Yeah, spit on it.
I'm starting to learn, by the way, during the commercial break that there are people who I know very well who I guess would park in that handicapped parking space, like, regularly. I had no idea any of this stuff was going on, right, that anyone would be able to pull that off, but I mean, that's nuts. I mean, these are people like I know very, very well, but I'm not going to name them because they don't work here anymore, and I don't think it's very fair, but either way, that is a little bit of a character hit there.
It's full a lot at night. I don't know a lot of the cars. I'm at night. There's not as many people here, but I don't know a lot of the cars, but there's quite often that spot's taken.
That is very strange. Well, the previous CBS Sports Minute was brought to you by South Shore Bank, and I might get to that a little bit later on, but Red Sox, they're down in spring training, and we were talking about David Price and his comments earlier. Jason Mastrodonato, who is the Red Sox reporter for the Boston Herald,
He has been down. He's been reporting everything that's been going on at spring training. It's brought to you by Matty Audi of Fall River. And Jason joins us now. Good morning, Jason. Thanks for coming on the show.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. What did you make of David Price's big J.D. Martinez anti-negativity while being negative rant that he gave Bob Nightingale of the USA Today yesterday?
Right. Well, I mean, we see this often, right, where it's spring training, national writers will pop in, and all of a sudden they're they're doing an interview and writing a story with a take that's not at all what we're used to seeing around here, right? It was kind of like, you know, give David Price a chance, and he's such a good guy, and we see this kind of stuff happen sometimes. So I was a little taken back by the tone of the story, because I don't think it was accurate or what we tend to see around here, but I was most surprised that Price chose to do this and to, after a few days ago where he sat on the picnic table out here and kind of, you know, talked about how remorseful he was for his actions last year, and said he would talk to Dennis Eckersley if Eckersley wanted to have a conversation, and, you know, said pretty much all the right things about moving forward and trying not to make the same mistakes he's made in the past and winning the fans back. And then all of a sudden, a few days later, he goes out and says, oh, God, Boston's so negative. You know, J.D. Martinez is going to get booed, just like David Ortiz got booed. Like Price is the, you know, the guy who's deciding that David Ortiz wasn't liked in Boston or something. It was just really confusing to me that he wanted to do that. And I'll never knock a guy for saying his thoughts, because then we end up with athletes who don't say anything and we don't get to know them, and it's no fun. So I'm happy that he said his thoughts, but that's what he's feeling. It's just confusing that just a few days ago he was singing a different tune.
So why, answer your own question, why do you think he went from telling you guys one thing and then morphing back into the David Price we're more familiar with the national guy? I mean, did he not think people read USA Today? Did he not think we'd find out about it? Like, why? Why was he so different?
Right. I'm guessing it was just like, you know, he couldn't help himself. Like, this is probably how he really feels. You know, we saw it over and over last year. I mean, he talks about how negative it is here, and, you know, he shoos us away when we go to his lockers. I'm not talking to you guys. And he's just got such an attitude with the media. It seems like he treats the media almost as it was an entire city. Like if that's how he feels about Boston, if that's how he feels about the team and the city, that's kind of how he treats people who are trying to show him to the fans. But I feel like he just can't help himself. You know, like, this is how he really feels. Like, he really doesn't seem to like it very much here. And somebody wanted to ask him and talk to him and got him in the right place, in the right mindset, and he said how he felt.
Well, the first thing I thought when I read that article, Jason, is that of all the people that is the first to really reach out and try to, you know, introduce him to all things Red Sox culture, the last person you would want is David Price, the guy who got in the fight with Dennis Eckersley and, I mean, really caused that whole cloud over the team at the second half of it. And you kind of wish that maybe he was ushered in by a different player. I mean, maybe a Mookie Betts. I'm trying to think of a good example of someone who is not David Price.
Anyone who isn't Price. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So now, from what you know of J.D. Martinez and his personality, do you think that he is someone who, I guess, would morph into what David Price is talking about? Like, buy into David Price's type of personality? Or is he somebody who has a strong enough confidence in himself that he's his own guy and won't get swayed one way or the other in the clubhouse?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. That's what we're going to learn from him. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest questions of Martinez coming in is just that. I would hope, and from what I've heard, is he's so focused on hitting. Like, I mean, I think you guys were playing the clip yesterday with Torrey Lovello talking about how his routine is like the most, you know, detailed, constructed routine that he's ever seen, where the guy gets in early and he does the same thing every day, and he's like watching more video than anyone's ever seen him watch video. And even Price said that a few days ago when we asked him about Martinez, that, you know, he learned a lot of things from Miguel Cabrera when he was playing in Detroit, and he's kind of morphed into like this, you know, sensei for hitting, where he's just so focused on it. So if he takes that attitude in, where he's just so focused on playing baseball, I think he's going to do just fine. If he gets caught up in all the, well, you know, is Boston negative? Who should I listen to? You know, should I be reading these stories that they're writing about me and listening to the radio and watching TV? Like, if he gets caught up in all of that, which is possible, we see guys get caught up in it all the time, especially guys who haven't played in a big market, then we might find some trouble.
Jason, just one more question about Price. John Lackey was hated here for a long period of time, and he found his way back and actually found his way into a leadership role at the end before he was traded. Is there a path that David Price can follow? Can he follow the John Lackey path to the right side of the fence?
Yeah, I mean, sure, of course there's a path. I don't know if he wants to take it. Yeah, that's what it seems like. It's like, you know, a week ago we said, okay, Price laid out the path. Here it is. You know, he wants to go pitch well, and if he does, everyone, maybe they won't love him. Maybe he's not going to be the most revered player in Red Sox history. But if he goes out and puts up a good season and helps his team get back to the playoffs and pitches like he did last year in the playoffs, people are going to have no problem with him. And, yeah, he could be the guy who gets cheered off the mound, who gets a standing ovation coming off the mound in a postseason like John Lackey was. I don't know if it matters if he keeps talking. I think his thing is it doesn't matter what I say if I pitch well. And I don't know if he's trying to test it, if he's just trying to be kind of as disruptive as he can during interviews, at least some interviews, to then go pitch well and see what happens. I think if he pitches well, it probably will be okay, but it's weird that he keeps trying to get in his own way.
All right, Jason Mastrodonato from the Boston Herald. He's down in Fort Myers right now. And just from the little bit that you've been able to be with him and the small amount of time he's been with the team, what's your first impression of Alex Cora?
Yeah, you know, I think he's trying really hard to be the player's manager. And he's clearly a lot different than John Farrell. You know, you could even tell on the first day where, you know, Farrell was kind of the guy who would provide analysis on players and you know, kind of talk about what their strengths and weaknesses are and all that. And Cora always goes right back. He's kind of like Torey Lovello, which is why I think so many people like Torey Lovello, is he goes right to the personal relationship when he talks about guys. You know, David Price, he's not talking about his mindset and how he feels about Boston. He's talking about, well, he's got children and I got children and, you know, I took him out to lunch and we did this and that. That's his whole thing, is connecting with guys. He's younger. He's played with some of these guys. And I think that's what they need right now. If he's in there all the time talking to them and being with them, I think it's going to reduce tension. You would hope that it reduces tension. If there's a split clubhouse and you have the manager who's kind of in there all the time and talking to guys and going out to dinner with them and knows exactly what's going on, you know, this is stuff that John Farrell didn't do. I don't think he was a very good communicator. A lot of the guys will say that, you know, Cora's big strength is he's going to be a communicator. So far it looks like that's going to be the biggest key for him.
Yeah, on the coaching side too, there was the situation you had with John Henry the other day. Seemed to be calling out Chili Davis for whatever errors they had in their offense and their hitting. Did you think it was any of that fair in your opinion? From what you saw, it did seem like he was just throwing them under the bus.
Well, you know, it sure did. Yeah, it's not just Chili Davis, maybe the whole coaching staff, John Farrell too. I mean, he made a comment where he said, "Who's left? Dana, right? Okay, that's what I thought. You know, like, everyone's gone. We clean house in here." So it wasn't just Chili. My guess is, and this is just my guess, is that he stumbled across some number or somebody said something to him. Maybe it was like Cora during the interview who said, "Hey, you know, you guys were a really passive team last year. You guys were not very aggressive. Maybe that worked in 2013, taking a lot of pitches, driving up the pitch count, getting into bullpens, but it's not working right now. The teams that are playing the best baseball, the teams that are winning in October, that are scoring the most runs, are the teams that are being aggressive, that are going up there and swinging the bats. And that's not what the Red Sox did last year. I mean, look at Mookie Betts. You know, this is a guy who was aggressive when he came up to the league, who last year was just sitting there watching pitches. And he had a much lower swing rate than he had the year before. And now Cora says, we're going to move him to the leadoff spot. I want him up there swinging. There is some validity, I think, to what Henry was saying. It was just weird that he chose to throw the entire coaching staff under the bus and say that all of a sudden we're going to be so much better just if we're more aggressive at the plate.
Jason, does spring training feel empty without Dan Roach?
Oh, you know, I think there are probably some players and some coaches that misses positive, upbeat attitude.
Do you just text him and you're like, it's so warm down here. It's such great, great weather, and it's fun to watch all the baseball.
But it would be warmer if you were here, Dan.
But I just got a towel snap from Pedroia that was meant for you. and then he just, like, you know, puts like a frowny emoji or one of those, what's the ones that look like Dan Roach, like the Bitmoji.
Yeah.
So do you just kind of rub it into him at all by any chance over the phone?
I haven't, but I can if you guys want me to.
Yeah, you should.
Just to check in on the guy.
Yeah.
You know, just to push him a little further.
Let him know you're
darkness.
Thinking of him.
All right, Jason. Well, listen, good stuff. Thanks for checking in with us, and, you know, we'll check in with you later. We'll air on. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, Jason. I thought that article was very funny. I mean, you expect it from David Price, but just as I was reading it, I know people just like him, where it's, I hate negative people, so I'm going to crap on everyone negative around me.
Can't have any negativity in my life. I can't have it. I don't want to live that way.
Right. Yet that's exactly what I'm doing right now. I'm being extremely negative, but either way. I just, the fact that it was one saying one thing one day and one thing the other and trying to have two different attitudes towards the team. And
he's so transparent, right? It's like a lot of people wanted to give him credit, and he deserved credit for last week. It's like, okay, he took a step forward. You know, I wasn't saying he was a changed guy or anything, but maybe there's a bit of a different approach. And then a week later, he's right back to who he's always been.
Sure. And I want to like Alex Cora, and I want to hope that he's the guy who comes in and maybe solves some of these issues, and who would handle the Eckersley situation a whole hell of a lot different. I mean, you couldn't have handled it worse than John Farrell did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's hope. There's a lot of hope. It is funny, however, when the first pitch hasn't even been thrown, a game hasn't even been played, and you've already got David Price being David Price.
Already.
It's like you can just count on
it. He's a leader.
he had the hoodie that said, "We need leaders."
Yeah, he's a leader.
On the back of it. So, you know, David Price sending a message. All right, 617-779-0985. Here is John Wallach's headlines.
The games are only half of it. Hatcher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Five of Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich. We got Adam Jones here in for Fred this morning, which I like having Adam in, but unfortunately today is a day when Fred could have taken a nice little victory lap because one of his favorite people on the planet ended up basically being crapped on all day yesterday in the news, but deservedly so. I mean, this is somebody who absolutely deserved it. Somebody who continues to screw up so much that I actually had to go back and do research to figure out what indeed yesterday's punishment was all about.
Right, like out of all the crappy things he's done, what was this one?
Yeah, and just to remind you of the relationship that this person has with our own Fred Toucher, let's go back in the Wayback Machine real quick.
We're joined by Rick Pitino, former coach of the Celtics, current coach of the Louisville Cardinals, who won the national championship. Rick Pitino, hello!
Good morning, guys.
You stink, you ruined the Celtics. That's freaking brilliant. If I had my finger on the button, I would have done the exact same thing. I could not be...
I didn't realize he was even going to do that. So, Rick Pitino, we're back live.
That's what I was going to ask. Neither of you guys knew that was coming?
No. Had no idea. So, Rick Pitino, all I know is that we were saying Rick Pitino was coming on the show, and we kept getting all these tweets like, you know, this guy's an a-hole. Why are you having Rick Pitino on? And we aren't big fans of Rick Pitino, but he asked to come on. Like, his publicist contacted Dan and was like, hey, he's promoting this book, like, How to Be a Great Guy or whatever it was called.
Yeah. And success in life.
Like,
you right. know. Yeah.
How not to F up royally. Yeah. And he called to be on the show. And finally, it was just like, Fred was like, all right, well, you stink, you ruined the Celtics. He just hung up on him. And it's amazing what, like, something that stupid, like, boy, the Herald wrote this big article. Like, yeah. You know, I talked to the guy who wrote it later.
There are people who won't come on the show because of that.
You know, what's his name? Boxer Magoo. Yeah. Tough Guy McGee from Indianapolis.
Tough Guy
Greg
McGee.
Doyle. Greg Doyle. Greg Doyle will come on the show because of that.
You
disrespect Rick Pitino. I'm like, right. Really? That
a class
is...
act like Rick Pitino.
That's right.
That's the guy you want to put all your cards behind is Rick Pitino?
Yeah.
That's
Boxer
the one
McGee.
He likes writing about how he's a badass. It's funny because I actually kind of like Greg Doyle because he knows what he's doing, and he's peeing on the anthill. But I mean, he does have this like tough guy persona that he likes writing about. I'll kick anyone's ass,
right?
Which cracks me up.
And then the emoji for his Twitter page is him, you know, fighting.
Well, yeah, because he's super tough.
Yeah,
but so what happened yesterday is it was announced because of, and once again, I had to go back and say which F up was this about, and it was because of the hiring of strippers, and apparently there were sexual favors for recruits, and I guess they appealed their vacating of all their wins 2011 through 2012, also 2014, 2015, and the 2013 national title. They've all been vacated. To that I go, why does that even matter? What does that even mean? Vacating of wins you've already profited. The school's already profited from having those wins. I mean, they sold tons of merchandise, I'm sure, after it was done. So they made a ton of money.
Helped them recruit in the future. Yep. Gave you all kinds of name recognition where guys want to go play there.
Absolutely. Guys who were on that team, they probably got better contracts because they were on that team. Yep. Rick Pitino made a ton of money during that time. It's like, what is vacating wins other than for the school to go, ah, shucks.
Right.
We don't have that batter up there no more.
Terry Rozier turned into a first round pick here while he was part of those Louisville teams.
Yes.
It works out for guys.
The only one part of it that actually makes me laugh and it thinks that the vacating of those wins is worth it is that if you remember in 2013, he made a bet with his team and they said to him, if you guys win the national championship, I will get a tattoo on my back that says Louisville National NCAA Champions 2013. So now that dumbass has a gigantic tattoo on his back left shoulder that says National Champions of a vacated championship.
It does look really cool, though.
Yeah. He's super cool, dude.
It blends right in with the pale skin and the freckles. I think it complements very nicely.
I mean, listen, I'm not one to talk, but that guy's complexion, it's like... he looks like the dude who drank from the wrong grail. Not the best, healthiest looking skin. Rick Pitino. But so they completely took away all those wins, and that doesn't mean anything. Vacating wins is the dumbest thing, because especially when it's that far in the past.
I mean, I tend to agree, but you want to rile up a UMass fan. Just tell them their Final Four never happened and show me the banner.
Bertrand comes in later.
Yeah, mention that.
Mention the Camby banner. So they can take it down.
I'm with you in spirit. Oh, great. Take away the title. All the fans won it. They all experienced it. Yeah. But like... Oh, you guys won in 2013? Oh, just show me the banner.
Yeah.
UMass, you went to the Final Four? Really? With Marcus Camby? Really? If you could just show me your Final Four banner, that'd be great.
I love how many people like stood behind Rick Pitino when we hung up on him. I mean, honestly, it was so bad. I went back and I'm like, okay, was this punishment about the whole getting the woman pregnant and paying for the abortion thing?
No. Was it pay for play where they paid a recruit to go to Louisville?
Was it the Adidas thing where they're funneling money through one of the shoe companies?
The NCAA was cool with all that. They're like, no, that's fine. That's okay.
Right. All the guys that we got the whole riot act on, like, how dare you? Now, I understand, like, Bill Walton. See, the Bill Walton, and this is something we haven't done in forever, and we've only done it, as far as I know, three times. There was... was the Theo Fleury. Fleury, I think, might have been the first one. So Theo Fleury was,
once again, another one we were all blindsided by.
No.
You knew that? I did not know.
I made the call on that one.
Oh, you did?
Okay. So what happened was Theo
Fleury. He kept blowing you guys off.
Theo Fleury was booked seven? Yeah, dances seven times. Not speaking hyperbole. Seven times. Six times he had blown us off. And most of those days were the day of. Like, we would either call him and get no answer, or before, like, maybe 5 minutes before the interview, hey, sorry, he's not going to be able to do it. Literally seven times. So he kept teasing it. And then finally, it was the commercial break beforehand, and Theo Fleury was coming up. When he finally called in, I'm like, Fred, just hang up on him. nothing's going to be as good as I just did that. And so that was planned. It was like kind of cheesy. And then there was the Bill Walton one. Now, the Bill Walton one, I think, was justified, because remember, that was the morning after the Celtics had lost Game 7 in the 2010 finals against the Lakers.
We had Scalabrine call us from the Sunset Strip, depressed that they lost.
6:01.
That's right. 6:01 in the morning. Scal, so he's calls running in around 3 a.m. Pacific time. So Walton calls in. It was 9 o'clock.
Real quick, color the picture a little bit better, is that Scalabrine, we didn't call him.
No.
He wanted to apologize for them losing that game. Like, he was heartbroken. So afterwards, he was literally wandering around Los Angeles by himself and wanted to tell the people of Boston, we tried. This was a massive disappointment. It was a heartbreaking call. It was like a great moment and showed that Scal is like a normal human being and a good guy. And he called in and like spilled his guts out. And so an hour later, we had Bill Walton already booked on the show, like for a month in advance. He was there to promote something. And he came on the show. And the first thing is like, I'm just so proud of my son and the Lakers last night, the way that they came from behind and blah, 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 blah. And Fred's like, all right, listen, this is... it's kind of tough for, you know, Celtics fans to listen to this morning. Oh, but though the way that they just were able to rally, and Fred's like, enough, and hung up on him. And he kind of, he gave him a warning, like, Celtics fans are kind of pissed right now about how this all went down. The last thing they want to hear.
Right, talk about the Grateful Dead. Do your thing. Do your right. thing. Don't talk about your kids.
Right, the last thing you want to hear is Bill Walton gloating. And like, you know, so, like, even, like, Bob Ryan, who we like, you know, gave us, like, some crap for that. And I understand, like, that I get. Yeah, but it was the right thing to do at the time, because we warned him. We're like,
Bill Walton and Larry Bird, it was the best passing combination you've ever seen, and just you can't hate on him.
Oh, but the best thing was that just people just rallied behind Rick Pitino, and now look at him. And, I mean, now look at the guy,
Bill Walton. That's an okay guy to defend.
I get it, Bill, and I like Bill Walton, but it was just the wrong time, and we warned him.
No. But like, if there's a hill to die on, like you said earlier, Bill Walton. We never know any of these people, but seems like a better guy than Rick freaking Pitino. Right, like, that's a better hill to die on.
Who now is the most unfortunate tattoo in sports right now. All right, 617-779-0985. We'll be back in just a minute.
Toucher and Rich.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Somewhere Jeff Fisher's cruising up to the sidewalk and lowering the shades. What's up, Double Bubble? Looking for some trouble? Oh, Jeff Fisher.
His reflective aviators just kind of pulls him down. Hey.
Speaking of Jeff, I want to discuss it real quick. But first, our listeners know our show even more than we do. It's Toucher and Rich, by the way. Adam Jones is in for Fred. I said there was only three times that we had hung up on somebody, and I was reminded of the time Terrell Owens called in.
Oh.
So I completely forgot about this. And by the way, all of these, I'm looking back, are pretty well deserved. The Fleury one was just kind of funny, by the way. That was just like, because after seven times, you know.
Hello, Theo.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Goodbye.
Okay, that was the whole interview there.
He sounded like he had a lot of good stuff ready to go. He was into it. I think you guys missed out on a real whopper of an interview there.
Yeah, I think at that point it was just like, all right, man, you leave us out to dry six times, seventh time, all right. But I forgot, Terrell Owens one time was on the show, and he had, John, did he just finish playing? I think that
he was at least a year out of it.
Was fresh off his final season, I thought. But either
way, sounds right.
Even if it was today, there's a lot of stuff to talk Terrell Owens about.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a guy that we were looking forward to doing an interview with. So he was on, and he was promoting this show he was doing called, like, Celebrity Diving or something like that. And the only reason people watched was because Louis Anderson was on it. Everyone just wanted to see him just get crushed. But you know how it works. When there's a person who is promoting some sort of product or whatever, what you do is you, at the very beginning, you plug what they're doing, then you start asking questions that aren't about the product, knowing that at the end of it, the last 20 to 30% of it, you'll talk about it.
You'll bring it back.
Yeah, that's how everyone who does celebrity interviews knows that. Like, the last 30% is when you close it down. At the very beginning, you say, hey, we'll talk about it in a moment. You kind of tease it. So we had him on, Terrell Owens, and we asked him a question about his time. I think it was the Dallas Cowboys. It wasn't anything outrageous. It wasn't like a shocking question. And I forget what the question was. And literally, answer number one was this.
I thought we were talking about diving. You know, other than that, if it's not, you know, talking about the diving competition, then I don't really want to, you know, go any further with this interview.
All right. And that was it.
Well deserved.
There's literally nothing to talk about.
Exactly.
That. Like, I mean, we were going to say the last 20 that we're going to indulge you because you were nice enough to come on the show. We do that.
Well, you could ask them about a pencil dive, jackknife.
Sure.
Cannonball.
You know, I told Fred, I said we should just for 10 minutes asked him like really awful diving questions. What's it like to dive? Tell me, it's got to be crazy to be diving on TV, huh?
How about that little swimsuit they make you wear, am I right?
It's got to get cold. So I forgot.
They have to blur things out on TV.
So our listeners they remember way more about the show than we do. So I appreciate, I completely forgot about that. But we were talking about Jeff Fisher, and it got me thinking about, so all the movements being made here in the offseason, the story that cracks me up the most is the fact that Kirk Cousins, who I think is a good quarterback, Kirk Cousins is going to get a ridiculous amount of money.
Damn. So much.
Did you hear the report that the Jets, you know, they're saying that they're willing to go all in on this guy to the point where they're considering fully guaranteeing his contract?
Oh,
This would be, I think, the first case where you get a guy who's going to get, I mean, if you're going to fully guarantee a contract.
It's going to be $100 million. $125 million.
I read $60 million in year one.
Yeah.
Yep. I heard he could get up to $60 million.
Signing bonus.
In year one.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of times where I believe things are floated out there by the agent in order to get the hype up and to get people bidding against each other. I thoroughly believe the Jets would do something like that. Like, they would throw that much money at this guy. Because right now, if you're Kirk Cousins and you're thinking to yourself, all right, I want to go someplace where I'm going to get paid, but I also want to go someplace that's set up to win if I show up. Where are you looking at? It ain't the Jets.
Denver.
You're looking at Denver.
Minnesota.
Yep. See, the Minnesota situation, just take Case Keenum. I think Case Keenum proved himself.
Sure, but like from his standpoint, if Minnesota wants him, that's a place you could go win.
It is. But, I mean, if you're him.
He has tons of leverage.
Yes, but if you're the Jets, you know that. That's what he's thinking. Jets aren't set up to win if he shows up.
No, that's his leverage.
Absolutely. He's like, Denver, I go over here, although the defense was pretty god-awful at the end of the season. But either way, I mean, they have the talent. If he shows up, he can win over there and still make a ton of money. And the Jets are freaking out. They want somebody right away, and they want Kirk Cousins. So the fact that they're willing to fully guarantee what could be upwards of over $100 million is just dependent.
This is what life is like when you go over a decade without a good quarterback. Well, actually, when was the last time Pennington was there?
I mean, yeah, it's been probably, a decade. Probably about a decade. Yeah.
This is what life is like for teams that don't have quarterbacks for long periods of time, or draft poorly like the Jets did, or don't sign guys. It is
a bit of a reflection.
A succession plan is necessary for the Patriots, ladies and gentlemen.
And you guys
just want to bring that up now.
And you guys think I'm dumb saying that next year Foles is going to get $1 zillion.
No, I'm saying it's, I mean, look who the highest paid quarterback is in the league right now. It's Garoppolo. He's played 7 games.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's a bit of a reflection of what guys are getting in that league too. Matt Stafford was the highest paid quarterback. I like Kirk Cousins too. I would probably take him over Stafford, but he's a kind of middle of the pack, top 10-ish quarterback. Yeah, I mean, Foles is going to make money. He's accomplished more than Garoppolo ever did.
They don't think he's going to make more than 100. They think that he's like John and Fred believe that he is nothing more than a backup quarterback.
I think he's a system quarterback with the right offensive coordinator and the right head coach. Yes,
I'm not telling you he's going to be good. I say what he's going to make. That's not accurate.
I think NFL teams see the same thing and won't pay nearly as much.
No way.
No,
see, I don't think he'll make a lot.
When he's a free agent, he is a guy who ripped it up through the playoffs, unless something like awful happens to him this year. But if he stays healthy, if Wentz shows up and he's just sitting there,
teams are
going to kill it.
Teams are desperate for quarterbacks. Yeah, he just won a Super Bowl.
I know he won a Super Bowl, but I think that's more product of the people around him than it is him himself. The plays that he can call. You take the read pass option away from him. I think he's a shell of what he is.
Then just let him, exactly. Just let him do it.
Yeah, implement it. It works. If you're gonna make that investment to bring this guy in there, change the offense.
But that's the point. I don't know if an NFL team, any NFL team, is going to overhaul everything just for this quarterback.
He's your quarterback.
Well, if you don't have the personnel sitting there that allows you to implement that for Nick Foles, I don't know if you necessarily spend all that money.
Well, I mean, if you're a team that needs a quarterback that bad, then you're probably a team that could use a coaching change, too. Somebody who can implement that the right way. I just think that he's somebody that you can't overlook the fact that he was a Super Bowl champion, the MVP of the Super Bowl.
Two very good postseason games.
I'm not really a big fan of his at all, but just I think someone's going to give up a lot for him.
You will admit that will be the wrong move.
Yeah, I don't think it's smart, but I just think it'll happen. Yeah. I just think it's going to happen.
Well, either way, I think the market's gone nuts, and what's going to happen? This is my favorite storyline of the offseason right now, other than Rob Gronkowski and his move to the WWE, because I guess that's
oh, Jimmy Stewart's
real.
All in. Jimmy Stewart
well, good,
is all
well,
in.
Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart's like he'll be at WrestleMania.
Listen to him.
Is it April?
Listen to Jimmy Stewart because of all the people he would know more than anyone else.
He said Gronk's going to sign on the dotted line and he's gone.
Listen, right now, and I heard Breer say this the other day, 50-50. It might even be more than that. If you're going to make $5 to $6 million Ronda Rousey money just to be in the WWE and still be able to do all the other things, all the movies you want to do, and the Patriots don't budge?
Good life.
Hell yeah, it's a good life. It's a better life. You're not getting your bones crushed. And the WWE stuff, you can control many. I mean, you're still going to get hurt, but it's not like getting blindsided and getting a helmet right to your skull or getting your knees taken out. You know? So why wouldn't you choose that? All right. Well, let's go into headlines with Wallach, and then we will be back. We have something we want to do here with Adam Jones.